You're listening to The Hawk, 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you're listening to a show called Dangerfield on 101.5 FM The Hawk out of Hamilton, Ontario. I'm Mary, and tonight my guest is Adam Baldwin. Adam Baldwin is a Canadian singer and songwriter from Nova Scotia. In addition to his solo work, Adam also plays in a band with a fellow Dartmouth native, Matt Mays. Adam's also known for playing in a Halifax local band called the Carltones. Welcome to the show, Adam.
I'm so happy to be here with you, Mary.
This will be fun.
You bet it will.
I'm going to start off the show with a song of yours called Dark Beside the Dawn. It's off of your album called No Rest for the Wicked, and we'll play that, and then we'll come back and we'll chat a little bit more, okay?
Fantastic.
Take my hand now, steady. Terrain is deadly. I can see my city falling while it goes on dancing, and I'm down here crawling. He spends the night enchanting. See, there's a man in my skin. He sleeps in my thoughts. He fights with my fists. You like to see me fuck off, but I've been waiting for you. I've been bracing for you. The dark beside the dawn. I hold you till you're gone. If I could save it for you, I'd embrace it for you. The dark beside the dawn. I got this contagion, it's parasitic. Now baby run when I run, cause I'm afraid it's winning. There's been a hostile conquer, there's been a cold injection. You better run for cover, it's for your own protection. But I've been waiting for you, I've been bracing for you. If I could save it for you, I'd embrace it for you. The dark beside the dawn goes on and on and on. Oh,
was Dark Beside the Dawn by Adam Baldwin. Adam Baldwin's joining me tonight. He's a Canadian singer-songwriter. He's released three EPs, 2013's Adam Baldwin, 2019's No Rest for the Wicked, and 2020's Acoustic Chin-Up Sessions. He's also recorded a full-length album in 2016, No Telling When, precisely 1985. Adam's also won four Music Nova Scotia awards, including Male Artist Recording of the Year, Musician of the Year, and twice for Rock Recording of the Year. So, Adam, after that big intro. I'm just going to dive in and just start talking music with you. So I guess my first question is, do you remember the first music that you kind of connected to when you were a kid?
Yeah, it was... Tom Petty's Full Moon Fever. My father had it, had the cassette in his pickup truck, and we used to, I remember hearing it driving to hockey practices when I was 5 years old or something, bright and early in the morning,
Didn't you go to like Tom Petty's park or something with your dad recently?
I did. Yeah. When did we go? I was down in Florida with my family, April of 2018, I guess. Mm-hmm. And my father, I had flown down with my partner and my kids, and my father and mother had driven down. And I drove back with my father, and that was it was really the only place I felt like stuck. I've done some touring through the United States, and I just felt like it would be an apropos place for the two of us to stop, because my father's responsible for having gotten to me in a lot of the music that I still hold dearly. And that park had just been dedicated, and we stopped by, and it's a beautiful little park. It's got some really nice, like kind of weeping willow trees and a couple of baseball diamonds. It was right up my alley.
Totally.
It was cool.
You recorded a song, I think it was in the past year or so, and it was on a Canadians Sing Tom Petty tribute album. I think you recorded King's Highway, correct?
I sure did.
Well, maybe we'll listen to that.
Nice.
And then we'll come back and we'll chat a little bit more, okay?
Great.
When the time gets right, I'm gonna pick you up and take you far away from trouble, my love, under a big old sky, in a field of green. There's gotta be something left for us to be. Comes our way, and we'll ride down the King's Highway. Yeah. No, you can't hide out in a six-gun town. We wanna hold our heads up, but we gotta stay down. And I don't wanna end up in a room all alone. Don't wanna end up someone that I don't even know. Love ran away today. Good fortune comes our way, and we'll ride down the King's Highway, yeah.
and we'll ride down the King's Highway.
So that was Adam Baldwin covering King's Highway by Tom Petty. Adam's joining me tonight on 101.5 FM The Hawk. We're going to spend a full hour talking music and listening to his songs and listening to his stories. So Adam, before we listened to that song, you were talking about how your father had gotten you into music and into Tom Petty as kind of the gateway songs. And so you've got two children of your own. What do you find when you're playing music for your kids that they respond to most? Like, is it the beat? Is it the lyrics? Like, are they the instruments? Like, what do you observe?
That's a really good question. I noticed my daughter, I don't know how, like, she's my daughter's almost six, and I'm not sure how much of the, like, lyrical songwriting is registering, but she does have, she seems to have the ability to hang on to lyrics. So I kind of have to think that they must mean something to her. Mm-hmm. The other day she started singing a Sophie B. Hawkins song, As I Lay Me Down, it's called.
Yeah.
And it was so pretty to hear a five-year-old, she was coloring or painting or something, and she started singing that, and Jessie's my partner. She couldn't quite put a finger on what the song was. And then when I came home, I heard her singing it, and Jessie asked me what it was. And then but my daughter seems to kind of have whatever it is that I have. And maybe it's too early to say, but she seems really musical. And she's always asking me to teach her little songs on piano and stuff. So I think all of it is kind of registering with her. My young fella kind of had it for a little while, it seemed, but he found video games on his iPad, and I don't think he much cares about it these days.
Well, I know that I think you and your son, you share a love of sport and baseball, and I know that's one of your passions. And I was actually, like, reading up about a couple of things about baseball and music. And one of them being, like, the walk-up song for players and the evolution of it. And I guess I kind of was just reading about it before knowing that I was talking to you, and kind of trying to understand, like, the history of the organ in Major League Baseball. And there was an interesting fact that I read about how the walk-up song kind of evolved from, there was a female her name, she was associated with the White Sox, I believe.
Sure.
And she was in the 70s, and she was the first person that kind of changed, I think, like, she started kind of sneaking in little like codes when the players would come in and people started to respond. Cause I think before then it was just, you know, the typical kind of, there was kind of organ stuff. So sure. if you had to set your walk-up song, if you were a baseball player, what would it be?
Oh man. I love that question so much. You know, the easy answer is Born to Run. I think that'd be really fun, but I would like a few more days to think about it. had I been playing more baseball this year, I think I probably would have had it figured out, but I just was so unprepared for that question. It's so good. But for now we'll go with Born to Run, and maybe next season I'll dream up something else.
Right. Well, you go Born to Home Run.
Yeah. Oh my God. Amazing. What did that, it took us 8 minutes until.
Yeah. Okay.
There it is. 8 minutes and Mary's back.
So a couple of things I wanted to kind of dive into. So this kind of ties into the whole like Oregon Major League Baseball player. So apparently there's this gentleman who plays for the Red Sox, and apparently every day at, I don't know if you've heard about this, but he does like a live stream on Facebook of, and people, he plays requests of, like, he's a baseball wow. organist, and apparently Wilco has had him up on stage and all this kind of stuff. But
no way.
One of the things that he references in taking song requests is that he can pick up and replay a tune within something like 30 seconds. First question is, how did you learn music? Was it by ear or was it by theory? And how do you take music in? Can you play back something that quickly or how do you process music?
Well, I did when I was a young boy. My mother made me go to piano lessons and I hated them. Mm-hmm. And she, to her credit, my mother always said, you'll thank me when you're older. And I thought she was full of beans. And then when I was in high school, I wanted to play in a band, and where I grew up was a pretty small town, and they kind of the only band that was around. They already had two really good guitar players, so I just sort of told them I could play keyboard, but I hadn't played piano in a decade or something, so I sort of had to teach myself again how it all worked. I think I had enough of the sort of cornerstone that I could do that. But as far as like, I can't read music any longer. I'm not sure how well I ever could, but I can certainly hear something and figure it out, but I'm not sure that I could do it in under a minute. That's pretty remarkable. But that's sort of how I write. I think I hear stuff in my head, and I'm lucky enough to have just enough ability to sort of figure out what I am hearing in my old noodle, and then put it down either on a piano or on a guitar and go
for
there.
That are just joining, you're listening to Adam Baldwin with myself, Mary, on 101.5 FM The Hawk out of Hamilton, Ontario. And so, Adam, this past, I guess, when COVID started, you did a series called Cross Country Chin-Ups every Friday for, I believe it was it 15 weeks in total that you did them? Or was it 16?
It might have been 16 all told. That's where I feel like we wound up at. I think I did 15 weeks for free. And then the last one I had my band in, and we it was sort of like a ticketed thing.
Right.
I think it was 16 weeks, and I'm not sure I took any time. I think it was 16 weeks kind of in a row, maybe. I could be wrong, but anyway, all told, it was 16 weeks.
And you put out an EP of it. So for those that want to check out Adam's music, it's adambaldwin.bandcamp.com, adambaldwin.ca are the two ways that you can access his music. And so, Adam, you put out an EP of some of those sessions. I think Cam picked about six songs. And so I think it was a good way for people to see kind of like a bit of a middle zone. So like you're known for your rock and roll performance shows. And then you also have a bit a couple of side gigs where you play kind of more strip jam versions locally in Halifax. And I think this was a bit of a way for Canada to see kind of the converging of the two. And so when you were, are there any songs that you play only one way and you've never crossed them over into like another version of it? So for example, like you'll play one song acoustically, or you'll play it on piano, or you'll play it electric. Are there any songs that you reserve just for one way of playing?
No, I would never try to I think just to keep myself interested.
Yeah.
I play them. I try to play everything. Never the same once, I guess. And that even goes the same with like when I'm playing with the band. I've got a good enough band that we can kind of make some changes on the fly if we have to. But certainly and I haven't got anything reserved just for piano. I haven't got anything reserved just for guitar. And I think that's it just makes it a little bit more fun for me, truthfully, to perform them that way. And it's just a different way for them to be interpreted by myself and other people too, whoever's listening to them.
Nice. And do you play any other instruments?
No, not well. I can sort of play four on the four drum beat, and then that's about the extent of it. I'll play a little bit of bass if I'm making demos and stuff, but I try to teach myself how to play the fiddle a couple of years ago, and that was a disaster. I know too many good fiddle players to try to even mess around with it, so I called it a day.
Well, and you've taken your songs and you've gone into the studio and recorded your albums with some pretty phenomenal producers. So, for example, Gus Van Gogh, who's recorded tons of amazing artists such as Sam Roberts Band and Winter Sleep. And then also Liam O'Neill, who's worked with Metric and Kings of Leon. What's the one maybe piece of advice that you kind of, or not piece of advice, but maybe what's the one learning that you took away from recording with each of them?
I really loved working with Liam and Gus and Gus's and Werner, who works with Gus. I loved it, and I learned a lot about how to structure songs, I think, and how to trim the fat. I needed to work with producers to learn that I needed to be produced, I guess. I have an inflated ego enough to have thought that that the way that I originally dream all these things up is perfect, and everybody's going to love it. And then when you sit down with people like Liam and Gus, you sort of hand your trust over to them, and you hand some of these pieces of art that are very personal to you, and they, it's their job to sort of dissect them and get rid of things that you don't often want to get rid of. Now, that said, as much as I loved working with them and respected their sort of musical advice, I also think it's important, and I've learned this from working with those guys as well, that sometimes you have to stick to your guns and trust your own gut. And I don't think that I've always been good at that. And so I'm working on a thing now where it's just me and my band, and we are, I'm trusting my gut on this one. And thus far I'm pretty happy with it.
Nice. And so give a shout out to who is in your band right now.
My band is comprised of Ryan Stanley on guitar, Leith Fleming Smith on keyboards, Zach McLean also plays guitar and sings with me. Brody Peterson plays bass, and a fellow named Jordan Murphy is playing drums with me.
Cool. So are you working on a new album coming up then, or?
Yeah, I am. We started recording actually the night that we did the band set on the internet. The next day we started recording everything. And we'd done some pre-production a couple weeks prior to that, and kind of went through everything and with a fine tooth comb. And I'd never had my full band involved in a project before. So it was really nice to get these guys who are some of the best around where I come from. It was nice to get their input instead of, you know, people who are a lot closer to me. It was really great to get their input on everything. And I'm really proud of how it's starting to turn out.
Awesome. Well, why don't we play a song off of one of the Cross Country Chin Up EP songs, and then we'll come back and we'll chat a little bit more. Okay.
Lovely.
Oh, my baby, baby, why you making me bleed? You gotta show me some mercy, let me off of my knees. I'll take 20 years to right my wrong. Just don't keep me from my love that long. All right. Oh, my baby, baby, why you walking away? Won't you tell me, honey, what you want me to say? She wanna find some other company. Said she just can't stand the sight of me. Oh, and when it hits the skin, all you losers take a walk. When it is just what it is, when it's love on the rocks. So I sit by the phone and I'm waiting to hear of a voice that may disappear. When the moment arrived, it was painfully clear. All the words she spoke had to pass through her tears. Oh, and when it hits the skin, you losers take a walk. When it is just what it is, will it's love on the rocks. When it is the skins, hearts break and the money talks. It's kids just being kids. Love on the rocks, goddamn. No, my baby got her heart set free. Said she locked it up tight with the likes of me. I can't believe what she said she gone and found. She got a man gonna turn all her luck around and around, around and around and around, around and around and around and around, around and around. Talks. It's kids being kids. Well, there's love on the rise. Well, there's love on the rise. I said, when it hits the skins, hearts break and the money talks. It is just what it is. They call it love on the rocks. I said love on the rocks. I said love on the rocks.
Oh, That was Adam Baldwin. You're listening to 101.5 FM The Hawk. So, Adam, we spoke a little of some of your influences earlier, one being Tom Petty. And so I read a quote that you said, and it said that you could teach a course in Springsteen. So my question to you is, if you had to teach a course of Springsteen, how would you divide it up? Would it be by decade? Would it be by theme? How would you teach Springsteen to people?
Probably by theme. I think his first two records comprise of a theme. He was really going for like a Dylan kind of thing, and you could like psychoanalyze those lyrics from the first two records, and I still never really get a semblance of what the songs are about. But I really loved it, his older writing, and then you move into the sort of hit parades, from Born to Run to The River, and then he throws Nebraska in there, and Nebraska kind of matches up with the Ghost of Tom Joad and Devils and Dust. So those three records are a unit of the course. And then there's his solo albums. And there's a record, I think, from 89 that called Tunnel of Love, which I really love. A lot of people don't like it. I think that record is sort of, it's one of my favorite records of his, because it's out there. He's in the middle of getting rid of the E Street Band, and he's also leaving his wife for another woman. There's a lot to unpack in that album. So I think that's a unit. But anyway, that's how I do it. I would do it sort of in chunks, but certainly not by decade. It would have to be by some of the characters that he plays in these songs. I think maybe that's how you have to do it, is go even further. You have to forget about the albums. You'd have to go through the album song by song, and I gotta do up a syllabus. I'll get back to you about that too.
Sure, it's interesting.
Yeah,
to hear how people kind of, take it in and how they would. It's also interesting how people would to present it to people. So if you had never heard of Springsteen, so maybe another question then is. That's obviously a personal interpretation, how you present.
That's right.
So how do you, before you listen to a new album, whoever it may be, let's just say a new album comes out, you're excited to hear it. Do you read album reviews of other people before they come out, or do you take them with a grain of salt? Do you not read them? What are your thoughts on albums?
No, I would never read an album review. I don't think there's, I don't know. Maybe some folks get something out of those, but I don't like the idea of reviewing art in general.
Yeah.
I think it's all in the, at the risk of sounding cliche, the beauty of things is all in the eye of the beholder. And I'm not one to take anybody's opinion is gospel on those matters. I think that it's just I don't know why I believe this, because I'm not a terribly spiritual person, but I just think that music sort of just winds up in the ears of people who need to hear it.
Right.
So I don't know how you quantify that. You can't. I guess album reviews they never make any sense to me. I don't know
Have you ever listened to music that's been sung in like a different language at all?
I have. I love it. I've been listening to a lot of French French music from the 1970s of late. Mo Kenny sent me, my friend Mo Kenny from out here, who'd be a person you'd probably love to talk to, by the way, Mary.
Nice.
But, she sent me some stuff a while back, and this lady's name escapes me now, but it's the recordings sound really beautiful, and whatever, I don't know much French, but whatever this lady is singing, it is heartbreaking. And you know, like even how do you say her name? Edith Piaf.
Yeah, I mean,
that stuff sounds gorgeous, and I haven't the slightest idea what she's saying, but you can feel what she's trying to convey, and you know, that can't be lost on anybody. If I were an idiot, I would say, "Oh, I don't understand what's being said here." So, how can I give it a good review? But I'm a human with a soul and a heart, and so I can hear it and I can sense it and feel it. And again, it's something you can't quantify. I certainly would never try to write about it or critique it in any way, shape, or form.
And are you someone that when you hear music, like, do you like add, like if it's a simple, let's just say like acoustic song, for example, like do you add other instruments in your brain when you hear it? Or are you able to just like focus on how the music's being presented to you?
After like the first listen, and again, it's not something I typically ever verbalize, except for if we're in like the van on tour somewhere and we have a lot of time to pass, then I think that's when we all become amateur album critics and here's what I would have done. And I'm talking about like Beatles records, you know.
Yeah.
We have no business talking about what should or shouldn't have been done on all these albums that were just tearing to shreds. But I don't know. It's just fun to imagine, I think, what one might do had they been given the opportunity to play on Zombie Zoo, you know, or whatever. But it doesn't mean anything. I certainly wouldn't publish it.
And then how do you feel that, like, so, you know, for example, like, kind of in this day and age, like, kind of more, like, modern musicians almost get dissuaded if they put out one album and they're almost, like, expecting a response of the kind of generation that came before? And do you think that people get turned off music because of what they think the response should be? Do you think that our generation is going to be able to see past that and just kind of keep believing and keep making music?
I sure hope so. I don't know, because I wasn't around in the you know, the sort of renaissance of rock and roll in the 70s and the 80s, and I was too young to even have really understood grunge when it happened. You know, like I don't remember Nirvana. I just remember, like, how old was I? I was 8 when Kurt Cobain died, or something. My parents were definitely not. There were no Nirvana CDs around my house. I kind of found it afterward, but I just don't know that there is room. I don't know that there's been room made for people who are taking artistic risks with rock and roll music, and I think it's okay to reuse stuff from those days. But I just feel like, certainly in my experience, you know, I can't tell you how many times radio stations have been like, "Nah, there's too much piano on that." Or, "Why do you have a saxophone solo here?" And when I was younger, when I first started putting records out, that stuff really used to bother me, and I used to take it to heart, and I would lose confidence. And I'm at an age now where I just don't care about what those people say about it anymore. And I'm willing to take risks and commit them to record and put them out and let the chips fall where they may, because that's what will make me feel better about what I'm doing. I didn't feel great before when I was putting out other works, because I had a different idea of what success in this business was, and it was defined by other people, and I don't have that anymore. So I guess, to answer your question in a bit of a roundabout way, I think that artists just have to define success as something other than how much money you're making and how many of your songs are charting on the radio. Yeah. And the more we all start doing that, I think that eventually top 40 rock radio is not going to have anything to play except for stuff that's coming from artists who are really going to the far reaches of their creativity and trying something different and trying something exciting. And that's not necessarily that. I don't think that ethos is exactly being nurtured right now, but that's all the more reason for us to try to do that, I guess.
And do you think that COVID and the experience of people kind of pausing and, you know, not being able to kind of distract themselves with a lot of external just distractions in general, do you think that people are now more focused and more appreciative of art as it comes out? Or
that's been my experience.
Yeah.
For sure. And I'm lucky to live in a part of this country where I can pretty safely travel to four different provinces and play my songs. And I've been busy. I mean, this is not to brag, as I certainly, there's a lot of people in my line of work who are struggling with things, but the shows that I've played over the course of the summer, there's something different about the audience. It's, you know, I kind of got the inkling that, like, they're not going to shows just because it was the thing that their friends were doing. It was the thing that was happening. Oh, you know, so-and-so's coming to town. Are you going? And then people would just kind of show up and kind of half pay attention and maybe be half into it, but it was more of an excuse to hang out with your buds and have some drinks. I played shows all summer to super attentive audiences who were extraordinarily appreciative of just somebody sitting up there and babbling on, telling stories about how I wrote songs and then singing them. I don't know if that'll last. I hope it does, but even just over the course of when I was playing on the internet, I would get dozens of messages every Saturday morning, folks telling me how much they appreciated what I was doing. And I mean, I was doing it. I was hoping that it would kind of cheer people up a little bit, but I had to do it too. I mean, I'd have lost my mind. It was nice. I just hope it was, mutually beneficial. And that's certainly what it felt like to me.
Cool. Well, let's listen to a song of yours called Half a Mind, and then we'll come back and we'll chat a little bit more. Okay.
Marvelous.
I
You're listening to 101.5 The Hawk FM. I'm Mary, and I'm joined tonight with Adam Baldwin. So, Adam, we were talking about just a little bit before about Bruce Springsteen, and he got quite involved at the tail end, especially of this election with Donald Trump, and putting out some political statements and music and videos around it. What do you think is the most political song that you've ever written?
I wrote a song called Daylight. It was on my on the No Telling When album, and I recorded all the music with Liam and the guys, and I was flying up to Toronto to start singing, and I didn't have words for the song, and I was flying somewhere over like the Ottawa Valley, I remember, and it was just before, Justin Trudeau was elected, and at that time, I think a lot of us had really high hopes for him. It was the end of this, what felt like a sort of tyrannical kind of reign that the previous prime minister had presided over. And I think a lot of us felt really good about this new incoming prime minister and his government. And I wrote that song, not just about Trudeau, but a lot of the things that were going on in our country, the sort of the endeavor for reconciliation with our Aboriginal community, and at the time, you know, there was the upheaval in Syria, and I remember that little boy dead on the beach. And anyway, I was just sort of like a raw nerve at that time. And I wrote that about, you know, I really wanted our country to be, a beacon for not just, folks from abroad, but even the downtrodden in our, within our own borders. Yeah, that would probably be as political as I ever got on record.
And so you're someone who reads like a lot of news. I think you've been reading the paper since you were like a little tiny kid.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you see as like the future for media, like kind of globally, because it appears that it's kind of being, you know, bought up by conglomerates. Like, how do you view like kind of hope for how people can take information in moving forward?
I don't know. I'm afraid of. I don't care for how that's happened. Television stations and radio stations and newspapers, they've all sort of been centralized to just a few people that own all those things. And I don't know, like as a kid, we had a local television station, you know, that had local programming and our newspaper, people read the newspaper. Obviously there was no internet to go to. And I think that within your own city or wherever you're from, a town or city, there's always going to be conflicting ideas and differences of opinion, and that's okay. That's fine. But it seems now that our differences of opinion seem to have just been, it's like, urban or rural. And I think that's just largely because all of our sort of traditional sources of media have been bought up by
Murdoch.
By these big, these big conglomerates, and there doesn't seem to be any room for anything within our communities. That's.
So Have you seen, sorry to interrupt you, but I saw a great documentary on Saturday, and it's Pete Souza, who was Obama's photographer, and he was also...
Yes.
Have you seen that documentary?
I haven't seen it. Was he also Reagan's?
Yeah, he was Reagan's as well. Yeah. I really recommend it. The reason why is that he kind of like, and I was kind of drawing some parallels as I watched it to his capturing of images, and it kind of made me just think about how, you know, certain lyrics, for example, can freeze people in a moment in time in their interpretation of it. Are there like certain, like how hard do you work at your own lyrics? Like, are you someone who writes kind of like it all out at once, or do you start with like one kind of part of a song? Like how do you write your words?
That's usually how I write. Is it, it all kind of gets beamed in a couple of sittings, if not one. And now, so once I get what I want to say, and I'll tinker with a couple cadence things and maybe a word or two here or there, but the gist of what I'm trying to say is usually comes out, you know, when I sit down to, I don't know how to explain it, but it really with me, songwriting comes in waves. I've gone months and months without anything. And then when it comes, it's like, it's just this outpouring of of emotion. And I try to ride that as long as I can. And that's been the most success I've had songwriting has been kind of not trying to force it, but when that happens, to make sure that I make time to make good use of it, I guess. I tinker with a couple things here and there, and then and musically, I think there's always lots of room to change things up. But lyrically, it's usually like kind of the first go at it is usually what I stick with.
Interesting. And so do your kids, friends know that, like, listen to your, like, do they know that you're a musician, or like, are they too young to know that, or how do your kids?
My son has said that, sometimes it is, he was going to like the after school program at, you know, when school would get out, him and his sister would hang out for a few hours. And he said that one time he was walking down a hall and he heard some of my songs coming out of one of the rooms that one of the teachers was in there playing it. And a couple of his teachers have said they know who I am. And I think like some of his friends' parents know who I am. I try to explain to him. My son equates fame. Anybody who's famous is as famous as The Rock. There's no in between. You know what I mean? So that's right. Yeah. So he thinks that because I've been recognized at the grocery store with him or whatever, that I'm as famous as The Rock, which I'm trying to explain to him is not at all the case. Yeah.
And do your parents have a favorite song of yours?
I don't honestly know. I don't know. I've never asked. They've told me which ones are not their favorite, but I don't know what their favorites are.
Nice.
I think they're happy if I'm happy. So, you know, I don't think they could pick actually, there's some, I think my newest stuff, there's a lot of songs about Nova Scotia. And I think there's a couple that of those that would probably be their favorites.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I think we're almost coming out of time here. So I just want to thank you, Adam, for your time tonight. It was been wonderful talking music. And I hope you give my love to Jesse and your family. And it was great talking to you, okay?
Jesse said to say hi. Thank you so much for having me, Mary. I'm so happy that you are doing this. You're the perfect person in this country to be hosting a radio show. And I was thrilled to do it.
Perfect. Take care, my dear.
Okay? You too, bud. See you later.
No rest for the wicked, no rest for the wicked, no rest for the wicked,
this parkway of blood red light. It screams and echoes through your pitch black light. Now you're broken, battered. Now you know how I felt. Now you resemble nothing. Now you're somebody else. No rest for the wicked. Shambles, you can burn like waste, or you can seize the shadows most dare not to chase. Dark breeds distortion, what's distorted ain't true. The truth in its contortions are unraveling you. No rest for the wicked. No rest for the wicked. Deception for